horse and binder days, which I hope you can grasp, Mr. Moffat.
All the time I have been telling stories of pioneering days in the Peace River country, I had a very strong feeling that here was not really the start of the Peace River story. And so, with Mr. Hendrick's permission, here is a new start. The Peace River will never be mentioned. I'll call this a trip on a harvester's train and go on from there. Aside from a trip over the Collingwood Mountains, now famous as a ski resort in Ontario, I had never been more than 14 or 15 miles from home. Collingwood was about 30 miles away. Fortunately, the means to go far afield was at hand, and this brings me to the reason for this story. I'll call it a trip on a harvester's train. Back in those days, the great Canadian prairies, with their fabulous acreages without a tree or a stone on them, were the talk of a lot of Ontario farmers. "Go west, young man, go west," was the slogan. Also, the young men were needed in the west. By this time, the horse binder was pretty well perfected, and this machine, with four horses pulling it, could cut and tie in bundles 20 acres a day on the huge 320 acre fields of Manitoba and Saskatchewan. A good binder operator could feed and water, harness and hitch his four horse team, oil his binder, and be all set to start the day's work by 7 a.m. Then all he had to do was keep the horses hustling along from corner to corner of the huge field he happened to be working in. He also had to see to it that his cutter bar was full. Horse binders were generally 8 feet wide, and if that is the cutting bar was 8 feet wide. And if this was not used completely, less grain would be cut that day. In addition to driving the horses, he kept an eagle eye on the grain immediately in front of him, paying particular attention to the length of crop and which way the wind was blowing. Then, by adjusting his tilt lever, setting the height of the cutting bar, and by moving his reel lever up or down, forth or back, in relation to the cutter bar, he could make the grain fall reasonably straight on the table canvas. The reel arms were much longer than they are present-day combines. They were geared to travel much slower, and the yellow reel slats twinkling in the sun, flop, 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 were a pretty sight as the binder made its way along the field of grain. Now, if the operator had his table canvas tight and true, the upper and lower elevator canvases tight and true, and the butter had the knotter in the right place, and the tension on the twine just right, he, the operator, was rewarded with a clean, well-balanced bundle falling onto the bundle carrier. A good binder man let three bundles fall on the bundle carrier, and just as the fourth bundle was being cast off, he would dump his bundle carrier, letting all fall on the ground. This rule did not work out in actual practice. For as the binder went round and round the field, these dumps were supposed to make a straight line at right angles to the way the binder was traveling. Sometimes, as the binder came opposite the previous dump, he only had two bundles, and sometimes he had six or eight. In a normal crop, it took two stookers to follow one binder. Now there were good stookers and poor stookers. Also, arguments could easily develop on what was a proper stook. I'll just say that the round stook, containing six to eight bundles, was the popular stook on the prairies. It stood up as good as any. It dragged good. And once a man got the hang of it, it was easy to build. Now, if you have been paying attention to what I have been saying, you will see that it took three men to get 20 acres in stooks in one day. And these stooks still had to be gathered to a central place in the field and thrashed. also using a tremendous amount of hand labor. So you can see that millions of acres use thousands of laborers not needed during the rest of the year. And these laborers had to be recruited from the farms and mines and cities of the Maritimes, Quebec, Ontario, and any other place within reach. And to transfer them to the prairies, the harvester's train was born. The railroads, still quite new, needed the revenue to be obtained from the huge crops of wheat that had to be carried from the west to eastern Canada. The first thing that had to be done with the wheat was harvest it, and at that time this took lots of men. 40,000 men were moved the first year I traveled on a harvester's train. That was in 1923. To encourage men to take this trip, fares were greatly reduced. $20 one way from eastern Canada to Winnipeg, 0.5 cent a mile anywhere from there to the Alberta-BC border. Now I'll take up my own story back where I say, fortunately, the means to go far afield was at hand. And I titled this trip, On a Harvester's Train. My cousin Jim Moffat had made the trip in 1922, and on several evenings I got him to tell me of his experiences. His stories and my two trips are going to be treated as one trip. On the 15th of June in 1923, my father and I cut the first alfalfa for that year. Being in the full flower of young manhood, I insisted at all times in doing the heavy work. No more driving the horse rake for me. That was kids and girls stuff. No more driving the noisy, clacking mower with its 6-foot cutter bar. For me, I would pile the new raked hay into coils for curing. Then, when it was dry enough, hoist it with mighty heaves onto the hay wagon, where my father would tramp and pull it around to make a huge square load to be hauled to the barn. Here it was unloaded by means of ropes and pulleys attached to a huge hay fork at one end and a team of horses driven by my mother at the other. Father would plunge the hay fork into the load of hay, jump on it 3 or 4 times to sink it further into the load, push the trip lever down, which turned two prongs at right angles to the sides of the fork, and stepping to one side would say to Mother, "Go ahead." She would say, "Come on, Prince and Flossie," and away from the barn they would go. The long hay rope stretching further and further from the barn, the pulleys placed at strategic points in the barn would whirl, and believe it or not, a huge pile of hay would begin to ascend toward the roof's rafters, some 30 or 40 feet above. On reaching the hay fork track, set in the very peak of the roof, the fork would click into a lock in the car, and it would quickly start rolling along the track to the other end of the barn. With the sudden release of weight, Prince and Flossie's double trees would drop, and Mother would turn them around to begin their journey back to the barn. Me, being already up in the hot and humid mow, would watch the progress of the bundle of hay along the track until I judged it to be in the right place, when I would holler, "Now!" Father would jerk the trip rope that was running lightly through his hand, and with a gentle swoosh, another 500 or 600 pounds of hay would drop into the mow. There, big, strong, husky bee would attack it with my pitchfork and try, off and on successfully, to have that bundle spread neatly all over the mow before father and mother could send another 500 or 600 pounds of hay up to me. On in the summer, my uncle got sick. Jim, my cousin, was working as a reporter for the Old Sound Sun Times, so Mary and Jenny, my 15 and 16-year-old cousins, took on the job of cutting and raking the hay, and Alec Morrison and I did the heavy work on that farm too. Thus the long hot days of June sped by. The clover hay, the timothy, the early fall wheat, the barley and the oats, and another crop of alfalfa were all harvested by the 14th of August. The first harvesters trained for that year, leaving on the 15th. Consternation and sadness seemed to hang over the country like a pall of smoke. Alec Morrison and his cousin Mel were going. Bert and Jack and Jim Moffat were going. Dave Rizzell, Elliot Shields, Jack Cronje, a Boer War veteran, was also going. All these from a circle of 2 or 3 miles. Who now would do the heavy work? Who would take the sisters who didn't have a boyfriend to church on Sunday night? Or the pie socials? Or the fall suppers? Who would kiss and cuddle the girls on the cold fall evenings? Alas, the harvester's train was leaving in the morning, and the very cream of the country was going on it.